Let's go start Parshas Vayakel Pekudei. We're gonna deal with the first pasuk in Parshas Vayakel. It says Paraklamet Hey Pasuk Aleph. Vayakel Moshe has called Asbani Yisrael Yomar Aleihem. Moshe gathered all of Asbani Yisrael and he said to them, Eilad Varim Shetiv Hashem Lasososam. These are the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded to do them. Now afterward we speak about Shabbos. This whole Parsha Vayakel and then Pekudei afterward is talking about the Mishkan. It's a continuation of Truma and Tetzaveh. It seems to be a lot of repetition from what happened in Truma and then eventually Tetzaveh and Pekudei itself. And it talks about their donations, what they actually brought, that they did Kasher Tziv Hashem Es Moshe, everything that Hashem commanded. So it's a little weird that we spend the first couple psukim in this parsha talking about Shabbos. That Moshe Rabbeinu gathered Bnei Yisrael, you'd think he would say to them, okay, now we're going to do the Mishkan. He does say, Eila the Ramasher Siyav Hashem Lasso, so some, these are the things that Hashem wants us to do. But then it goes into Shabbos. And after that, we go into the Mishkan. And what's the connection between them? So Rashi says, first of all, this gathering happened on the day after Yom Kippur of the first year. Meaning, obviously we know that they left Mitzrayim on Tesvav Nisan. Obviously that was Pesach. Kriyas Yom Suf happened on the seventh day. They got the Torah 50 days later, right? That was on Matan Torah, that's in Vav Zayin Siv, and whatever it was. Moshe Rabbeinu went up for 40 days, the Egel Azov happened. He went up for another 40 days to daven for them. He went up for another 40 days to get the second Paraluchos. He came down on Yom Kippur. On the day after Yom Kippur, this is the day where he gathered them together. He gathered them not by force, says Rashi, but rather by word of mouth. He told them, I'd like you to come, and the level of respect that everybody held for Moshe Rabbeinu after all that had happened with the Egel Azov, etc., shows that they still wanted everything that Moshe Rabbeinu had to give them. Ayelet HaShachar says, it's likely there was no Yom Kippur that year. And I think that makes the most sense. They wouldn't have been taught about Yom Kippur. Moshe Rabbeinu had been gone for the last 120 days. The best that I know, I don't think they learned about Yom Kippur during the Aseres Dibros. I know all the mitzvos were included in the Aseres Dibros. I just don't see a pasuk that says that they learned about Yom Kippur until much later on, until Parshas Achrimos, which means the most likely thing is that Yom Kippur was not held of as a fast day and as a day of kapara and slicha, etc., until the second year when they already were more into it and they knew certain other things, so it's likely that it didn't happen over there. So the luchos were given to on that day. I would even assume that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down with the luchos and Yom Kippur, they were partying. I would assume that they celebrated the fact that they had the luchos itself, but I can't tell you that for sure. But regardless, this would have been the day after Yom Kippur itself. Sitzel Chaim says it makes sense because they needed a kapara for what happened with Egel Azov. The last time that Moshe had been there, granted Moshe was back for like half a day in between the 40-day stint and the 40-day stint, but the last time they had seen Moshe Rabbeinu, they had just committed to Egel Azov and they needed a massive kapara. He was now available to tell them what to do, so they went to Moshe and they said, so what do we do now? We have the Egel Azov. Before, we feel horrible about what happened, even though the 3,000 people are now dead, 600 people and the other people that were sort of into it but not there, and the Erev Rav had been sort of kicked out of the immediate camp of Klal Yisrael, but what can we do to make it better? And Moshe Rabbeinu immediately tells them about the Mishkan, and he tells them, here's what I want you to build. I want you to build the Mishkan itself and to try to do it. Rabbeinu Bechaya says, they gathered together by Aaron, by the Egel, so they gathered together to do the Mishkan. This was the kapara for what they had done. To gather together in the right way. Teretz Yonasan as well talks about over here. And there were other kaparos. There are 13 donations that were given that we mentioned in Parshas Truma and repeat over here in Parshas Vayakel. Those 13 donations, obviously 13 is the gematria of Echad for the Achdus that they were supposed to have together, right? Which obviously was an issue that had happened right over here. The Vayakel is to be machaper for Vayakel they had by Aaron, as we just said. The Erev Rav were not allowed to be with them because of what the Erev Rav did by the Egel Azov. These were all issues that they took care of one after the other, each one of them taking care of another issue that they said. Maskil Ladavid, who's one of the Pirushi Rashi, says he could have told them everything on Yom Kippur itself. He came down from the mountain on Yom Kippur. He could have said to the people immediately, here's what we got to do. These are the issues. This is what we got to take care of. Of course, that's an idea behind it. But says the Maskil Ladavid, it's possible that would be a chilul of Yom Kippur itself. As we said, it's possible there was a day of Yom Kippur. It's possible there wasn't. It's a little bit of a kasha exactly what to do over here. Be'er Batzeta says basically the same thing. Who knows what's going to be with being Docha Shabbos, but that's another thing for another time over there. He was afraid of them carrying or bringing something with, something happening, and that's the reason why he didn't tell them about the Mishkan immediately when it came to that. The Ramban stresses the positive over here. Yes, there's an idea that he wanted that, obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had distanced himself from them, and he wanted to have it. The stress over here is not to think about how God's far away from them and the horrible things that had happened up until now. Moshe told him, don't worry. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina is going to rest again through the building of the Mishkan. Don't worry. You're going to get that Shechina back that you had at Har Sinai, that you had by Shavuos itself. It's going to be good again. It just takes a lot from you, and if you're willing to do it, you'll get it, and if not, not. And Rav Hirsch also talks about a thing over here, and it goes to over here of what's happening. But the basic idea, as we all see, is this idea of getting them together, gathering them together, and to bring about some type of a renewal for what had happened by the Egel Azov. Yes, they messed up. Now they're going to bring themselves back. The Alshich spoke about that at length. And the concept of what's going to happen, if we do this correctly, everything's going to be all good. We've got a problem, though. This happened the day after Yom Kippur. Does anybody else know what happened on the day after Yom Kippur? Anybody know? Day after Yom Kippur. The day after Yom Kippur, Moshe Rabbeinu came down, and immediately he did what? What was the deal that he got into right then? Not everybody all at once. Come on. Somebody's got to have this. I'm going to hint. Parshas Yisro.
Set up the judges.
They set up the judges. What did he do? He got up in the morning, and in Parshas Yisro, when Yisro came, it says he met with Yisro whenever Yisro came. Kasha when Yisro came. But on the day after Yom Kippur, says Rashi, he got up in the morning to judge the people. And he judged, says the Pasuk, may Boker ad Erev, from the morning until the evening. He was there doing it all day long. And what happened? Yisro looked at him and said, you can't do this. He scolded him and said, you can't do this. You're working all day long teaching the people about what to do judgment-wise and judging them and stuff like that. You can't do it. Rashi told us before, and it makes sense now, there's no way that Pasuk can be taken literally. There's no way Moshe was judging them from morning until evening. Because if there was, then there was no time to do this. Parshas Vayakel, which he told them about Shabbos and then the Mishkan, it never could have happened. Because let's think for a second. If he's judging them from morning until evening, then there's no time to be able to tell them about the Mishkan. It must be, it's got to be, that he only judged them a little bit. And as Rashi says, it's as if he judged them all day. It was something awesome, something great that you could do when you judge them all day. But the concept, says the Sifsei Chachamim, is that there's no way, absolutely no way, he actually judged them from morning until evening because he needed time to do this as well. The Kli Yakar says, it makes sense. He purposely started to judge them. He started off the day by judging them. He got them all together, and in the morning, right after everything was done, he got them all together and made sure that everyone had their own money and not someone else's. You can imagine that if stuff was being donated to the Mishkan later on that day, if people had other people's money, then that would have been horrible. That would have been absolutely horrible for everyone. Everybody would have been donating the wrong thing to the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, I'm sorry, and everybody would have had something wrong. So for that reason, on purpose, it had to be done so that we'll judge everybody first. Your money is your money. Yenim's money is Yenim's money. Everybody has their own money. And then he told them, all right, guys, now you can donate. So that nobody would just pull out the money from their pockets and give it over to the Mishkan, even though it might not have been theirs. He judged all the cases possible and then got involved over here. Taught them the halachos, what they needed to know. Maybe even taught them the halacha that you cannot donate something to Hektish that's not yours. So they only gave money that they knew was 100% theirs and not something else. You can imagine, like if somebody would go get up and say, teach us about tzedakah for the very first time, right? And everybody's so excited, they want to give money. But if I'm giving the wrong money, if I'm giving Daniel's money and I'm just giving it as if it's my own money, that's horrible. You just messed up. And this is the Mishkan. It has to be made perfectly. So first judge the people. Once you're finished judging and everybody has their own money and everything's taken care of, then I'll tell you about the Mishkan. And that was done absolutely on purpose. Paneach Raza says he judged until midday. He ate a meal. No, because judges should not eat a meal until they finish judging cases that they're involved with. They should not eat anything during that time. And then afterward, after midday, that's when he taught them about the Mishkan itself. It's strange that this was seemingly the first halacha he taught them, but that's that. This is the idea that goes down over here. Now, I do want to mention, by the way, I'm a little weirded out by the psukim, if this works out the way Rashi's saying it. Let's think for a second, guys. Vayakil was taught to them on the day after Yom Kippur, right? According to this idea right now, the day after Yom Kippur. Moshe Rabbeinu, again, had been gone for 120 days, right? We had Vav Sivan or Zayin Sivan where the Torah was given. Gone for 40 days, comes back, sees the Egel Azov and kills, whatever, goes back for 40 days, comes back for a little bit to get the Luchos, the second pair of Luchos, goes up with the second pair of Luchos, and then brings them down. Then Yom Kippur, he comes down, and then Machoros Yom Kippur, we have this right over here. When was Parshas Truma and Parshas Tetzaveh told to the people? When would that have been? When did he tell them about that? I want you to think about this for a second. If Vayakel was told to them the day after Yom Kippur, this Parsha was told to them, then what about Parshas Truma and Tetzaveh, which was the first time that we went through all this? When was that taught to them? Yeah, Ellie.
Wasn't Vayakel just the acting out of what happened in Truma and Tetzaveh?
Seemingly, that's what would be it.
It happened simultaneously, meaning like he had taught them, and then they carried it out simultaneously.
So it seems weird, though, because it does seem to say that Vayakel, meaning this Parsha, is all what happened after Moshe Rabbeinu came down. He was telling them what to do. It's not that Vayakel is only the Asiya. That's really Pekude. Vayakel is telling them, here's what you're going to do, as if he's telling it a second time. Well, when was the first time? And it doesn't look like it's just doing it, so to speak. He's telling them, here's what you're going to bring, and setting up Itzalo, yeah. That's the kasha. That's a better kasha. What's going on? What is going on with it? Now, I find this a little weird. The Netziv has an opinion here, but it seems to me, and I don't know if I'm totally right, that Rashi's shita, Rashi's opinion over here, and I know there's a big kasha about this, but Rashi's normal shita is that the parshos are in order unless you see something otherwise. And although he says that the Mishkan is a kapara for the Egel Azov, it looks like he held Truma and Tetzaveh were taught to them before the Egel Azov happened. That they learned about Truma and Tetzaveh, possibly even on Vav or Zion Sivan, on that day itself. And before Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain, they knew about the Mishkan itself. And then Vayakel was a repetition saying, you're going to do, remember what I told you 120 days ago? Now we're really going to do it. It's time to donate. They didn't donate up until that point, but it'll be there. Those who hold that the Torah is out of order, Truma and Tetzaveh is said now, and Vayakel, I don't know how to learn it. I don't understand it exactly. It would be like Vayakel is sort of, here's what he told them the day after Yom Kippur about Shabbos, maybe, right? And the Mishkan is really just referring back to what happened in Truma and Tetzaveh, but really Truma and Tetzaveh is now the day after Yom Kippur. It's weird. It's completely and utterly weird if you hold of the other opinion that the Parshos are out of order and we didn't know anything about the Mishkan until after the Egel Azov happened. I'm not sure how to answer up when all the Parshos happened. Maybe it wasn't the day after Yom Kippur, but I think that Rashi's hinting to us that Truma and Tetzaveh are before, then the Egel Azov happened, and then came by Yaakov Pekude the day after Yom Kippur. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Set refuah, the refuah of Truma and Tetzaveh, of the Mishkan and the Big Day Kuna Gedola.
Right, so they knew it, they still did it.
Very good. And then he went ahead, and somehow they found out later why they needed it so badly. Yeah, it's possible. It's very possible that that's the pshat behind it. It is weird. There is a Mari Asad. So first of all, the Kliyakar goes into a whole thing that they were more receptive in this day, etc. There's a big Kliyakar. You can look it up yourself. The Mari Asad, Rav Yehuda Asad, tremendous sefer, says this had to be the day after Yom Kippur, since Moshe didn't gather everyone together himself. There's a medrash that says that Shmuel Anavi was a greater Anav than Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, we all know Moshe Anav Mikol Adam. Moshe was the greatest Anav of all time, the most humble person that has ever existed. But the Medrash says Shmuel Anavi was more humbler than Moshe Rabbeinu. What's pshat? Why is it that Shmuel Anavi is considered more humble? So it says the Medrash, because Shmuel gathered Bnei Yisrael together himself. Shmuel went around and told everybody, gather at mitzvah, come to mitzvah, and he told them all himself. But Moshe Rabbeinu had a shliach to it. Thus, Vayakel is he had them gathered, as opposed to, I guess, I'm not a good, Vayakil. Vayakil would be, and he gathered them. Vayakel is he caused them to be gathered. Since he didn't gather himself, Shmuel was greater. So why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu gather them himself? Why wouldn't he have gone up to everybody and said, let's go together, guys, let's get everyone together? And maybe the pshat is he's a king. A king can't be mochel on his own honor. Shmuel was not a king. So Shmuel could be mochel on his own honor, but Moshe was a king, and a king can't be mochel on his own honor, so he couldn't do it himself, he had to send a shliach. But when Bnei Yisrael sinned with the Egel, Hashem told Moshe, lech raid, you're done. You're no longer on the level that you were at. Lech raid, you're down a level. You're no longer considered the king of Klal Yisrael. So up until that point, it could be that lasted until they were forgiven. Since he had them gathered through a shliach, it must be that they were already forgiven and the Moshe Rabbeinu was raised back to the level of a king. And if he's now a king again, he can't do it himself. He has to send a shliach. Since he sent a shliach and didn't do it himself, he couldn't do it himself. He was a king and he couldn't do that. Therefore, we know this must have been after Yom Kippur, after they had been forgiven for everything that happened by the Egel Azov. Yes?
He didn't have to do anything. He went up to Shema
this Vayakil was not a natural gathering. They might have been gathered at the foot of the mountain on Yom Kippur, but the next day he told them to come. And remember, if he was judging them in the beginning of the day, that means they weren't gathered yet. And he told them, okay, now gather. So it makes sense that he had to do something over here, but that's that. Ibn Ezra says, it makes sense that Moshe Rabbeinu did this himself. It makes a lot more sense. He wanted people to give donations, right? I don't know if anybody here has ever been a guy who's tried to get donations from other people. I hate doing it. I'm not a guy who's big into this. And like sometimes you need it, like in the shul or in yeshiva, you need to just go and raise money and just make sure that it all happens. And that makes sense. But Moshe Rabbeinu could not hand this over to anyone else. These are donations to the Mishkan. He needs this to be perfect. It's got to be done in such a way to spur people on and to want them to do it properly. If the rabbi of the shul sends someone else to get the donations, they're not going to give as much. The Rav goes up to him, it's something different. Just not too long ago, we had something here where we were collecting for something, for the Malava Malka. And somebody said, oh, somebody has to call this person up. So I said, this is what I said to the Rav. I said, listen, if you want me to collect as the assistant rabbi, I'll do it and I'll go to that person and I'll ask him for that amount of money. But here's what's going to happen. If I ask him, he's giving me $100. If you ask him, there's a zero added onto that number. I don't mean zero, 100, right? You get it, right? So it's going to be like that. It's one of the two. Moshe Rabbeinu realized that if he asked them to donate because of the level that he was on and how everybody treated him with respect, that was going to be so much better. So says the way that Ibn Ezra says it is, he spurred them on, and especially when you do it publicly. If you do it in such a fashion, people are going to be there. And there is a serious warning here. Yes, Moshe Rabbeinu said, I want you to donate, but we've been ignoring this up until now. You cannot donate on Shabbos. Shabbos cannot be utilized for such a thing. Nothing can happen when it comes to this. That was something they needed to hear from him. Because for him to say, yes, people, everybody donate, they probably would have gotten up and all donated together. But not on Shabbos. Shabbos cannot be utilized for this. Nothing can happen on Shabbos. That's something the warning had to come from Moshe Rabbeinu's mouth himself. The Alshich says the people even gave a Kal V'Chomer. The people went up to Moshe and said, Moshe Rabbeinu, you told us about the concept of a Kal V'Chomer. You taught us about this idea of when something's like this, then even more so like that. They said, we have a Kal V'Chomer here. You told us that you can get a bris meal on Shabbos. I don't know when he taught them these halachos. But you told us that you can give a bris meal on Shabbos. Why are you allowed to do a bris meal on Shabbos? Because you're starting off this kid's career, right? You're getting him closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So to get closer to God, you can do that on Shabbos. You're allowed to bring korbanos on Shabbos. You're allowed to bring a korban. A korban is about getting close to God. The word karov in the word korban. You're getting closer to God. So therefore, you're allowed to go ahead and bring a korban. You can bring that on Shabbos itself. It said you could do pikuach nefesh. If a person is dying, you're allowed to get in a car, break Shabbos, save that person in any which way. You can do anything you can for pikuach nefesh. You can break Shabbos. Why? To bring another soul closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who will allow him to do mitzvos. If that's true, even more so we should build the Mishkan. The Mishkan is bringing the Shechina to us. So they said, if we can do pikuach nefesh, and we can do milah, and we can bring korbanos on Shabbos, then why wouldn't you be able to build the Mishkan on Shabbos? It sounds ridiculous. You could do all those things to bring God close, but this, or bring us closer, but to bring God to us, you're not going to be able to do, says the Alshich. The Kal V'Chomer was tremendous, said Moshe Rabbeinu, it's wrong. It's wrong. You can't do it. Now why? He looked at them and he said, that's true that the Shechina will come down when the Mishkan's built. But until the Mishkan is fully built, the Shechina will not be here. So therefore, said Moshe Rabbeinu, you cannot donate or build the different parts of the Mishkan because the Shechina won't be there at that time. On that Shabbos, the Shechina is not going to rest. It's not going to land on that object. You're not bringing the Shechina down at that moment. You're building it for now and you're doing hachana, preparation for when the Shechina is going to come. Once the Shechina is there, then you can get yourself closer. But until that point, you can't build. So the building of the Mishkan and the donations to the Mishkan could not be done on Shabbos. I want you to think about this for a second. That means, in order to break Shabbos, there must be a reason that you're getting closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. an idea of getting yourself closer. Now, I am not using that as a blanket heter, so why not invite people over in order to keep Shabbos to get them closer to our Kodesh Baruch Hu? That clearly is not a halacha, right? And it's not there. Whether you hold of it or not, regarding bringing over Bali Tshuva for Shabbos, that's another issue altogether. It's not from here. But the concept, conceptually, right, the idea is that the only way that a person can break Shabbos is if there's a way for that person to keep more Shabbosos in the future, or for that person to become closer to God, like the Bris Mila, like Pikuach Nefesh, like, so to speak, the Korban, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us we're allowed to do. That's the concept over here, and what the Elsheikh is referring to over here, and what we said. Okay, that's a really cool idea, but that's there. But here's another great lesson. We learned from this Parsha, dealing with Hilchos Shabbos in the beginning, that every Shabbos, this is halacha, the Rav should gather together the people of his congregation and have them all sit together to hear drushos from the Rav. Because obviously there's more time available than during the week when everybody's working. On Shabbos is the time to have kihilos, groups of people together learning Torah, to sit and learn. During the week, you can maybe get a half hour here, a half hour there, you're able to grab and steal time away from something else, you can learn a little bit. On Shabbos, what's going on? There's nothing to do. You rest, you eat, you learn. There's nothing else to do. So you could, of course, get your bagel, and more than that, get your 15 and a half hours of rest. But there's so much time to learn. Rav Avadi Yosef never slept on Shabbos. He felt that it was such a waste. You have Shabbos day? Why would you sleep? You have so much time to learn. Now, I'm not asking anyone to be Rav Avadi Yosef. I am, but I'm not at the same time. Right? That's obviously not a real expectation. But for us to be able to utilize it, the Ben Ish Chai says in his Sefer in the Halachos, every blot of Gemara learned on Shabbos is 7 blots. Because if you couldn't learn during the week, so you have to learn on Shabbos itself, so you learned every day of the week if you get to learn on Shabbos. You're showing what I would do if I had more time during the week. So he says, 1 blot counts as 7 blot altogether. So that's awesome. You can learn 2 blot of Gemara. You have 14 blot in your pocket. 14 blot that you were able to get down. That's such an awesome idea to be able to go through. Says the Shach, every Shabbos, not only there should be great groups learning with the Rav, there should be groups of people learning together, everybody working with each other, making it happen. The Medrash seems to say that they learned Hilchos Shabbos, but the Medrash also says they learned Isser V'Hatter. And it makes sense. The idea is that, of course, you're supposed to learn halachas of Yom Tif before Yom Tif. Like right now, learning the halachas of coming up Pesach, once we get into Shavuos, learning the halachas of Yom Tif, what Chol HaMoed is all about. He claims this is the very first of the Shabbos drashos, to really get into it. It doesn't only include men. Women are included in this. Children are included with this. They all have to know what halachos are. And it's this. It's kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Everybody in the Eda, every Jew, man, woman, and child must find time on Shabbos to learn. And it is a drush from this week's parsha, which makes it into the realm of halacha. We know that Shabbos HaGadol is coming up and Shabbos Shuvah. We're such babies, guys. We're such little babies. Like now, the rabbi speaks for like 45 minutes and a Shabbos HaGadol drasha, you want to punch yourself in the face, right? The Ben Ish Chai spoke for 6 hours straight on Shabbos HaGadol, Shabbos Shuvah, Shabbos Parah, and Shabbos Parsha Zachar. And the men, women, and children would pack the house in Iraq. I'm sure it was extremely hot during some of those times, maybe not now, but around the times of Shabbos Shuvah Drasha, right at the end of the summer, they're sitting in September in Iraq, and they're sitting there huddled together, some people on the roof. Obviously, there is nothing on top of them. The women were on the roof, all listening to the Ben Ish Chai for hours on end, hours. I had a Rebbe of mine that went to a place called... I'm sorry? Find you a Ben Ish Chai. If you were in the times of the Ben Ish Chai, you would say, find me Rabbi Yaakov Abuchatzera. You know, you'd say the same thing. There are Ben Ish Chais of today. What you deserve is still around. They might not be a Ben Ish Chai, but there's other people around that are tremendous. Yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't have any entertainment. I mean,
I totally hear you. You know what? You're right. There was no entertainment at the time. So this is it. So on Shabbos, I'm I totally hear you. No, that's why Torah Anytime is here. I totally hear you. Like, because people are so spaced out, they're just like, I can't listen to a rabbi. I have to see it in a video. Like, it's impossible. No offense, everybody. But like the concept, like the idea of like, I totally understand where it comes from. But
I want to see some more talent.
I get it. When you deserve the more talent, you'll get the more talent. This. this concept, I do juggle quite a bit in my hands right now, but I will tell you, this idea is so awesome. There was a bunch of people, one of my rabbis, Rabbi Brazil, he ended up going to Lubbock, Texas for a medical issue that his daughter had. When he went there, he found that there was a group of Noahide Jews, obviously not Jewish at all. Noahide Jews, I just said, right? That's wrong. Noahides, right? That were, they believed, there were Shem Mitzvah Noah people. They obviously were not Jewish, nothing like that. They sat for hours because there was no real concept of anything. They had art scroll chumashim, the stone chumashim, reading through the English of the Parsha of the week with all the commentaries in the Rashi, right? And they go through every week, and there were like 20 people sitting around and doing it and going through the entire Parsha. Now, granted, right, that's only 20 people of a Noahide community in the middle of Texas, right? And I'm sure they didn't have anything else to do because there's nothing to do in Texas. So I'm sure that they were just bored and they were just sitting around. But that's awesome. That means that they're... That's like that puts the onus back on us and say to ourselves, come on, we have Shabbos. We have 25 hours of Shabbos. We got an extra hour knocked inside there. What are we doing? Yes, there's 2 hours of davening in the morning. There's about 45 minutes of davening at night, maybe another half an hour and 15 minutes of Mincha Maariv. So if I'm doing my math correctly and, you know, adding it up, right, that pretty much means you got 3.5 hours of davening down. Meals are long. Okay, so let's say 2 hours, right? 4 hours altogether. So that's 7.5 hours. 3.5 plus 4, carry the one. You got 7.5, right? After you get the 7.5 hours, you got to get your 10 hours of sleep. I hear you. I totally hear you. That's 17.5 hours. People, there are 25 hours on Shabbos. What are you doing for the other 7.5 of them?
Codenames?
Oh, you mean games. No, don't make me punch you in the face. No, 100% not. No, I granted, you know what? Fine. Play Codenames for an hour. You have, we're subtracting. It's 4.5 hours now. What are you doing during the 4.5 hours? You could finish Shas on Shabbos if you really wanted to. You could do anything you want. You have so much time. And that's the concept. The Taimi Dekros says, it's not just about Hilchos Shabbos. It's like, this is the concept of where, when someone who's Mechalel Shabbos is considered like a kofer, it's as if he's saying there's no greater situation. When people announce publicly the halachas of Shabbos, this is what Reb Chaim Kanievsky says, when people announce publicly the halachas of Shabbos, they're announcing that there's a creator. They're saying there is a creator of the world. If we're using Shabbos to learn the halachos, you are announcing there is a creator. I believe in it, and I believe that he created and he made Shabbos for us to be able to have. Reb Moshe says it's even more so. It's not just regarding the halachos. The ikar should be in every one of the things you learn on Shabbos to build up your emunah, to build up something in your emunah for Shabbos itself. And I believe, by the way, the Reb Moshe was referring to his times when people were being machal Shabbos right and left in order just to live, right, in America. And obviously, he wasn't there then, but right, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, and even further, when people were being machal Shabbos just to survive, to get past the work week and whatever it was, right, until they took Shabbos off. It makes sense. He was trying to say to deserve the honor that the Torah gives, the Torah gets, right? A person should learn specifically about Emunah, which is a great time to be able to learn it. And you find a sefer that you really like. Emunah Bitachon from the Chazon Ish, if you're a tremendous Hebrew linguist and you understand that type of Hebrew. You can learn Ali Shur, you can learn Kovitz Mamarim. There are some unbelievable sfarim out there. Or just simply put the Rambam, Hilchos Yisodos HaTorah. Just go through and like skip the part about the Galgalim and stuff like that. And you go through. There's some awesome stuff out there that you have no time to learn that you can utilize. Dave?
I thought that Kiddush on Friday night is a testament to the witnessing of creation.
Yeah.
And that in a sense makes you a partner in creation.
Correct, because that's why we say Yom HaShishi by Yechulu HaShemayim. We add on the sixth day to show that we're a partner in creation itself. Exactly. So learning those halakhas of Shabbos is showing that we're more than just partners. We believe in it more.
I
think the point is to add on to it. Yeah, it does something, but now you're adding on to it and making it as a part of you. I think that's the pshat behind it. And I think it also makes sense. The Ksav Sofer says, why are we learning Hilchos Shabbos? And the Medrash says that you're learning about Iser V'Heter. It just makes sense over here. The Pasuk seems to be talking about Hilchos Shabbos, and that's what it says. Vayakel Moshe and taught them about Shabbos. It doesn't say anything else over here. The pshat is, in the Midbar, they had all week to learn. So on Shabbos, they learned Hilchos Shabbos. Now, we don't have all week to learn. How much time? I'm sitting in yeshiva all day, but how much time do I actually get to learn? I don't mean teach. How much time do I actually get to learn something? To get down my own learning that does nothing to do with me giving a shiur or preparing for something else. How much time do I actually get to learn? A couple hours a day at the most. At the most, I hope that I can get in a couple hours a day that aren't, you know, preparing and doing stuff like that. Where I can really count it as my own personal learning. It's really, really difficult. Says the Ksav Sofer, on Shabbos, It used to be you did your own learning during the week, especially in the Midbar, because what were they doing all day? They were learning their own stuff during the week, and on Shabbos, learning Hilchos Shabbos. Nowadays, on Shabbos, do anything. Just do Isser V'Heter, because when else are you going to learn it? When else are you going to find out the halachas of going around? You shouldn't have to, and I know, and I don't take this lightly. I know that people text me shilas all the time or call me up with shilas all the time, but you should have the answers yourself. Meaning, you should be the expert in your house. Just like you're your own mashkiach, you go somewhere, you trust the hashgacha that has their name on the wall, but it's up to you at the end of the day. You have to trust the guy, and if you don't trust the guy, how could you go inside, right, and not know whatever? This is the idea. You are your own mashkiach. Find out the halachas yourself. Read a book that goes in, whether it's Hebrew or English. Find a book that has these halachas and go through it on Shabbos and have something that's just for you. We have a couple more minutes, so let's idea. What was the true purpose of the gathering over here? Why did they need to get together now? The Mi'amloi says the reason they got B'nai Yisrael together and the Erev Rav were not invited because they saw what the Erev Rav were like. They realized that the Erev Rav were only into destroying them. Led by Yonus and Yambrus or Yochanai and Mamre, those two sons of Bilam, they saw the concept of what these people were like and what they were doing, and they refused to invite them to the gathering. They understood from this point on, they have to be separate. So really, the point of Vayakel Moshe is Moshe gathered Adas B'nai Yisrael and turned to the Erev Rav and said, you guys are out. I don't want to deal with you anymore. You're out. This was the first full separation of Klal Yisrael from the Erev Rav to say, I don't want you guys anywhere near us anymore. The Shach says he knew that even speaking to the Erev Rav would be damaging for Moshe Rabbeinu, because even seeing an evil person affects you. Even going up and seeing somebody who's an evil person who is a Rasha, it affects you as a person. He didn't want them to benefit by staring at his face either. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu had that shine that went on his face? He didn't want them benefiting for that also. So it could be they did tshuva, the Erev Rav did tshuva, but he stayed away from them and said to them, there's no reason for him to go anywhere near, and this just didn't make it. No reason. Tom Bedas mentioned something with Strumbach as well to try to get them around. He erased their numbers from his phone, blocked their phone calls, right? He made sure that nobody from the Erev Rav would have any shaykhus to them from then on for that reason over there. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says a second answer. The reason why they needed a time to get together, because he saw, again, by the Egel Azov, there was something wrong. 600 or 3,000 people joined together with the Erev Rav to do it, and no one else cared. Everybody else in Klal Yisrael just stood around, put their hands in their pockets, and were just like, yeah, whatever. I mean, if those guys want to do that, that's fine. I'm going to go do my own thing over there. They didn't care. They saw Klal Yisrael sinning in front of their eyes and doing something wrong, and they couldn't care less. That should hurt you. It should bother you. If you see, and I know we're not on this level, and I know it's whatever, you see somebody being Mechalel Shabbos, it should hurt you. I don't mean you should be throwing rocks at them, right? Obviously, that's not the right thing to do either, because it doesn't seem like any Gedolim have ever suggested it ever. But the concept is to be able to sit there and say to yourself, I've got to do something about this. I have to, myself, to even, I can't. I'm not like this, and I'm telling you, I myself don't have it. But to cry when you see somebody being Mechalel Shabbos. Instead of saying, and again, this is a sensitive topic, but when you see somebody who intermarries or goes to the other nations and feels like they can't get somebody within our nation, that should make a person cry. Again, it doesn't mean that you go and you yell at them and scream at them and say you're destroying, etc. That's not the point. It's that how in the world do we have a nation that didn't do what we're supposed to be doing? We are in charge. We're the guys who are supposed to be doing the right things, and where are we? Why are we not doing it? Every single person here could be a Rebbe for 30 people in the suburbs, right? 30 people at least, if not more than that. You could be. And we're just sort of like, I don't know if it's that we just don't feel like we have the strength or the power or whatever. I'm sorry? Yeah. So that means you shouldn't try?
I feel it's a little heavy.
I'm being heavy. Yeah. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky is saying, when Moshe Rabbeinu saw that non-achdus, he said, we need to bring it all together. That's Vayakel Moshe. He brought B'nai Yisrael together. Again, the first opportunity he had, because he was gone 40, he gets them together. It's the day after Yom Kippur. He comes back down and he says, here's what we got to do. We're going to have, I don't know, a kumzitz together. We're going to get all together. We're going to learn a bunch of halachas of Shabbos. I'm going to teach you guys about the Mishkan, and then we're going to sing Achenu. Right? We're going to do it, and we're going to stand up. Everyone now! And they got everyone together. And that's it. So yes, you're right. I'm being way too heavy in the expectations of what's going on. And clearly, that isn't a full expectation. But just know, it's in everybody here to do this. Everyone has the ability to do it. It just takes a little bit of work. It takes a little bit, a lot of work to be able to build yourself up. And to do that, you have a coworker. Getting that coworker to eat kosher once, is a massive accomplishment. To be able to get them to say one time they're going to eat a kosher food. To get them, again, I'm not going to go all Chabad on you. I am not fully Chabad. But to get them to wear tefillin once, right? Just to wear tefillin for the first time in their lives without going to the kotel with a cardboard kippah, but to actually do it once in their life, that's amazing. Amazing. To invite them over for Shabbos, again, I'm not getting into the halachic issue of having them over when you think they're driving, whatever, that's another issue altogether. But like to tell them, I'd love to have you for Shabbos, there's a Pesach Seder coming up. To have them over for a Pesach Seder and then not going until 3 o'clock in the morning and doing this in a way that makes it available for them, we have it. It's there. It's right there. We just have to do a little bit more. Chassam Sofer says that the first thing we need to bring together, all we need for the Mishkan itself, is that Achdus, that ability to think that we're all together. And that's why when they didn't have Achdus and they had Sinas Chinam, that destroys the Beis HaMikdash. The Mishkan was built on Achdus, on Vayakel Moshe. The Beis HaMikdash is destroyed when there was no Achdus. I don't want to go into the Mishkan being destroyed. When Eli's sons, Hophni and Pinchas, took the Aron Kodesh with them out to war against the Plishtim, against the wishes of Eli. It was a strange move altogether to take the Aron Kodesh away from them. Somehow, there was a lack of Achdus, a breakdown in the connection that they had to their father, which caused a huge break in Klal Yisrael, which they lost for years until, thank God, we had a person like Shmuel and Avi to bring everybody back together and gather them at Mitzvah. But there was a problem there. There's a problem that's missing. That pirud, that separation, causes there to be a major, major issue. Do you remember we talked a couple weeks ago about the concept of the parochas, where the parochas is the idea of where it separates, but yet it's still the same room. It's still in the same idea. It's a partition, right? Something that does, but nonetheless, you're still there. That concept is what this idea is all about, of creating an actus that would be, listen, everybody does their own thing, but nonetheless, they should feel like there's some type of a connection together. There's a lot of other answers here. I wrote down a bunch of other answers. The Maril, the Orachayim HaKadosh, the Yalkut Ruveni over here, the Malach HaMavis that he was seeing with them, which is absolutely amazing. The Orachayim HaKadosh goes into the shine on his face, the Chidush HaRim that says the Masveh was all from Klal Yisrael. I'm sure you all know this. Where did Moshe Rabbeinu get his shine from? Bnei Yisrael said Nasa Manishma. They actually said Nasa number first on the third day of Sivan. Fourth day of Sivan, they said Nasa Vanishma. And Parshat Mishpatim toward the very end, when they said Nasa Vanishma, they were giving crowns. The crowns were crowns of light. One said Nasa, one said Nishma. When they did the Egel Azov, they lost the crowns. Horedes Ed Yom Me'alecha, take down your crowns, Moshe Rabbeinu told them. Moshe Rabbeinu saved those crowns by bringing it to himself, so to speak, grabbing that light and putting it on himself, so that every single day Moshe Rabbeinu's face shone like a bright light. That's what it was from all the crowns of Klal Yisrael. 600,000 times two crowns that were all on his face. So to speak, he was shining like a light. He had to put a mask on at the end of last week's parsha to hide that light from everybody else. On Shabbos, says the Chiddush HaRim, everyone got it back. Every single person got back their crowns. Every single person got back that light, the shine, so that Moshe Rabbeinu's face glowed, but they could handle it because they themselves got their glow back. Every Shabbos, can you imagine? This is the predecessor to the Neshama Yisera you get on Shabbos. Right now we use the Neshama Yisera to be able to eat a little bit of extra chalent. Right, that's what we use in Neshama Yisera. Oh, we got the Neshama Yisera. I have to feed my Neshama Yisera. Then the Neshama Yisera was something you could see, literally see with your own eyes. There was a shine that came. You don't think that they decided, let's make early Shabbos this week. Why wouldn't you? You make early Shabbos, you get the shine an hour earlier. If you, on Motzei Shabbos, were there people who are just like, oh man, it's got a minute to go, guys, 60 seconds, we're getting in the car. Like, do you think that was happening? They were sitting there like, we don't want to get rid of this. They didn't want it. They were all Amshinavar Hasidim, waiting until like Tuesday at like right before Shkia to make Havdalah. They're sitting there like extending Shabbos as long as they could because they felt it. They felt it like it was. Everybody's holding Magen Avraham 120 minutes after Shkia to be able to keep Shabbos up until that point. The concept was, and it's hinted here, Adas B'nai Yisrael is Edyom B'nai Yisrael. Vayakel Moshe. Moshe gathered together, says the Igret HaKalah. As Adas B'nai Yisrael, he gathered together the crowns of B'nai Yisrael, and he told them, hey guys, you want this back? You want the crowns back? You want this light for yourselves? Shabbos. You keep Shabbos, you get it back. You don't keep Shabbos, I'm keeping it. I get to keep it for myself. So it's your call. You can keep Shabbos and get your crowns back and be awesome, or you can allow me to have it and I'll be awesome. It's one of the two. It's an unreal, the way the Chiddush HaRim says it, I'm butchering the Chiddush HaRim, the Igret HaKalah, because I'm saying only parts of it, and I'm not saying the whole thing. But it's an amazing idea. Look at what we can get on Shabbos. There's an etziv over here that also goes through the order, an amazing order of how it possibly makes sense, how Vayaka was said. I'm not going to do it because we don't have any time. But the concept, what we've been talking about, and the idea, number one, of Moshe Rabbeinu gathering together, had to be seemingly on Motzi Yom Kippur, the ideas of what happened during that time, and this concept of gathering together on Shabbos, it's so important to build up our own stamina so that we can be that light unto the other nations, gather the light back for ourselves, and understand what it means to have that Nasav and Ishma. It's going to happen. When Mashiach comes, everybody's going to have the light again. So everybody has to build themselves up to the point where you'll be able to handle it. You'll be able to look at Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu no longer has to have the mask on his face. We'll have it ourselves all together because of everything we worked on Shabbos Kodesh itself. That's the idea behind this week's parsha. Shkoyach, everybody.